Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Sterling Heights, Michigan, and dreamed of being a sports announcer. After earning a BA degree in telecommunications from Michigan State University, he got a job announcing games for the Peoria Chiefs Single-A Baseball Club in 1987. He joined Fox Sports' Detroit broadcast team in 2002 as the Detroit Tigers play-by-play announcer and has teamed up with color commentator Rod Allen on the telecast. His name? Mario Empemba. And we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're with the voice of the Detroit Tigers, Mario Empemba. Mario, welcome. What an honor to have you.
Jack, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, around 8 Mile and Gratiot, and spent the majority of my youth there. We moved to Sterling Heights in the mid-70s when I was in sixth grade, but you know, my parents came over from Italy, and my dad especially, I'm very proud of him. He had very little money and didn't have the language when he came over from Italy, and built a business and put me through college, and very proud of him. So it was a great childhood, and I think I'm blessed to have grown up in this area. It's a great area, and still enjoy being here, and I'm glad to be back.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
Biggest thing I learned from Dad was to work hard. He did it every day. I mean, you know, my dad didn't see me play Little League baseball all that much. He very rarely was able to make any of my school events because he was working. He put in 9 hours a day, 6 days a week. He started his own shoe repair business, so he worked with the public and really had a very difficult job to do every day. But he found a way to do it, and he always made me feel that he was very proud of what I did, and I was very proud of him. My mom, very compassionate person. You could ask her to do anything, and she'll do anything for you, and still does. So really lucky to be born to two very, very good parents and two very, very good people.
What sports, Mario, did you play as a kid, and how good were you?
I was okay. You know, I was a decent athlete. I could run a little bit. I played a lot of baseball. And on the sand lot, I was probably one of the better players out there. But once it got organized and guys started throwing sliders and curveballs, that was about it for me. I topped out. But I enjoyed playing all the different sports, especially baseball, out on the fields all day. And we played a lot of basketball, a lot of street hockey. So I kept active. And it's something that I think was fun for me to do. It's something that maybe kids these days don't do enough of to keep them out of trouble. You know, all the video games and all of the internet and all the phones, and you know, you can do so many things that are non-productive these days, I think, for kids. And it was good as a kid to just get out and play the sports.
Mario, where did you get your love for announcing?
Ernie Harwell. I think that growing up, you know, listening to some of the great announcers, really not just Ernie, but Paul Carey and Bruce Martin and George Blaha and you know, all the guys that did all the professional sports here in Detroit, it really kind of captivated me. And I combined that with my love of sports, I think, to kind of veer down that path to want to become an announcer. I either wanted to write or I wanted to be an announcer. And I found that once I got to college, I couldn't deal with deadlines very good. So writing kind of took a backseat in terms of what I wanted to do professionally, and I kind of veered toward the broadcasting angle, and at this point I'm very happy that I did.
Did you do any announcing in high school or at MSU?
I did at MSU. In high school, we really didn't have a communications program, so to speak. We didn't have a radio station. A lot of high schools these days do, and that's very good. But I, in high school, took a lot of forensics classes. I competed in forensics, a lot of public speaking classes. I was the PA announcer for the basketball team. So I tried to get involved in as much as I could. But it really wasn't until I got to Michigan State where I was involved in the campus radio there, did play-by-play for Spartan basketball, baseball and hockey. You know, just did sports reports, learned how to edit tape. You know, these days it's all digital, but back then we would actually take a razor blade and physically cut the tape to edit it. That's how old I am. But those were probably some of the best years at Michigan State, learning my craft and making my mistakes back then.
Not many people are blessed in life, Mario, to start at the top. You started at the top in Peoria, Illinois, announcing baseball games for the Peoria Chiefs in '87. How'd you ever get that first gig?
Well, I would argue with you that doing minor league baseball is not starting at the top, but it was for me. I mean, it was a situation where I came out of Michigan State. My first job was in a small town in Texas, Plainview, Texas, where I took the job sight unseen. And I went down there and spent 9 months and learned a lot about radio and padded my resume a little bit. But it was such a culture shock for me that I just couldn't take too much of it. So I spent 9 months down there. A job opened up in Peoria doing minor league baseball. And a good friend of mine, Matt McConnell, who's now the voice of the Coyotes, the Phoenix Coyotes in the NHL, he and I were roommates at Michigan State. He was working in Peoria. He told me about the job. I interviewed for the job. I got the job. And that's how I kind of veered on that baseball path, and it brought me to the big leagues.
You've said publicly that you've gotten some breaks along the way. What were they? And most importantly, how did you get them?
Well, I think the biggest break I got, I mean, first of all, I believe that you make your own breaks to an extent, but you do need help from some people along the way, and I got some help. When I was in minor league baseball, I was working in Davenport, Iowa, and it was Class A ball at the time. And the progression for announcers is much like players. You play A ball, double A, triple A, and get to the big leagues, hopefully. For announcers, it's the same thing. But for me, I was working A ball in Davenport, Iowa, and our owner also owned a triple A team in Tucson, Arizona. And so when the opening became available at AAA, he bumped me up from A-ball to AAA. So I didn't have to go to AA. I didn't have to burn a few more years in the minor leagues. And that got me, I think, on a quicker track to getting a big league job. And my first big break, I think, came in the major leagues when John Savanna, who at the time was the broadcasting director for the California Angels, heard my stuff, liked my stuff. When an opening occurred, he asked me to interview, and I got the job there.
Another big break in Davenport, Iowa, was you meet a lady at the ballpark as an usher named Kathy.
I do. Then she turns out to be my wife. It's funny because when you work in the minor leagues, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to be married and have children and work in the minor leagues because the hours are terrible, the pay is terrible, and it really is a grind. It's a grind at the big league level, to be honest with you. But I met Kathy. She was working as an usher and a ticket seller at the ballpark, and we began dating. And a couple of years later, when I got to AAA, we got married, and we've been married 20 years now.
Mario and Pemba, did you ever think of quitting during those many years in the minors?
No, absolutely. Many times, Jack. I mean, I think back to the fact that I spent just 8 years in the minor leagues, which is not a whole lot when you consider some guys are still there that have been there for 30 years and still dream of being a big league announcer. I was fortunate. I got to be honest with you. I mean, it took some hard work. It took some skill, but it also took some luck. And the fact that somebody heard me, they liked what I did, and they wanted to hire me. But you know, 3, 4, 5 years in doing minor league baseball, you start to wonder, how much longer can I do this not making a whole lot of money and putting in the hours and hoping that somebody will hear you and like you? After year 6 or 7, I thought about maybe I should shift gears. But fortunately, I gave it a few more years and got my lucky break.
We're talking to Mario and Pemba, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Mario and Pemba, who during the baseball offseason is the official radio voice of Oakland University Golden Grizzlies, the men's basketball team, and the famous coach Greg Campy. Mario, do you remember the first time you ever went to Tiger Stadium?
I do, vaguely. I was very small. I can't tell you how old I was, but ironically, it wasn't for a baseball game. It was to watch the Lions and Packers. Unfortunately, I don't remember what year it was, and it was so cold. I do remember it was December. It was so cold, and I didn't want to be there. And we sat in the upper reaches of the upper deck at Tiger Stadium to watch this game, and I remember telling my dad at halftime, I want to go home because it was so cold, and I just wanted enjoying myself. But, you know, the early memories I had of Tiger baseball were probably in the early 70s. You know, I was born in 1963, so I was about, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old going to Tiger Stadium with my dad. And then eventually as I got bigger, going with my friends. And I always used to like, you know, people would love sitting in the box seats at Tiger Stadium because it was so intimate and you were so close to the players. I loved sitting in the upper deck in right field. I thought sitting in the upper deck at right field at Tiger Stadium was the greatest thing. You got a great view of the entire ballpark, and it also allowed you to heckle the right fielder, the opposing right fielder. And we just got a kick out of that. We would do that a lot. Some of my great memories are going to see Mark Fidrich pitch there when he made his comeback after he was injured as well. Of course, the 84 World Series. So a lot of great memories there, but, you know, it's unfortunate that place is no longer here.
How did you get hired by your beloved Detroit Tigers?
Well, you know, when you talk about being fortunate, I think I was fortunate in that respect as well. I had spent 7 years in Anaheim doing Angels baseball, mostly radio. I did fill in doing some television in September when our TV announcer went off and did some college football. So over the years, I had done maybe 20 or so games on television. Well, Josh Lewin had left the Tigers in 2002 to head to Texas to do the Texas Rangers, which opened up the job. And I thought, I'm going to apply for this job. I don't have a whole lot of television experience. I'll do it anyway. I didn't expect to get the job, to be honest with you. But John Toohey at Fox Sports Detroit, I think, liked the fact that I was from Detroit. I think he liked a little bit of my tape, and he decided to interview me, and I got the job. And to be honest, I think the fact that being from Detroit certainly helped me out. I think it gave me a leg up on maybe some of the other guys that were going for this job. But it's been a blessing. You know, it's been 10 years now. I just completed my 10th season here in Detroit, and it's been every step of the way, it's been outstanding. We've made it to the playoffs a couple of times, made it to the World Series once in 2006. So it's been a great, and it's been a fun ride.
Mariam Pempa, baseball is America's game. How do you explain our love for baseball?
Well, I think you explain it because it's handed down from generation to generation, and that's the way I think it was for me. You know, I got involved in baseball a lot as a kid because my brother played it a lot. He was a very good sandlot player, and I developed a love for the game. But when I go to the ballpark now, I see grandfathers with their sons and their sons. So you see three generations at the ballpark, and I think that's unique to baseball. Why that is, I don't know. But baseball has been part of our society for so long. Its history is deep-rooted, especially in towns like Boston, New York, Detroit, Cincinnati. It's been around so long that I think that it's just handed down from generation to generation. And I don't know that you see that in basketball or hockey. I think you see it a little bit in football, but baseball is different. Baseball is bringing your kid out to the ballpark on a 70-degree night in July, you know, in some of the greatest cathedrals in the country. And I think that's what the difference is between baseball and basketball and hockey and football and the other sports. The other sports have kind of morphed into entertainment, you know, where baseball, I think, has still been always about the game, and I think it always will be about the game. And maybe that turns some of the younger generation off because it's not fast enough, it's not high-paced enough, but that's what's great about baseball to me.
What has baseball taught you about life?
Well, I think it's taught me that there are going to be a lot of challenges and that it's not easy. You know, it's the old saying that even the best hitters fail 7 out of 10 times. Well, it's absolutely true. As much of a cliche as that is, it teaches you that you have to be humble, and the sport will humble you. And I've seen some of the greatest players go through some of the longest slumps. And it teaches you that if Derek Jeter can go 0-for-27 at one point in his career, well, that can happen to anybody. And tough things and tough stretches can happen to anybody. And so, you know, when you see some of the greatest players struggle, you know that there's a great lesson in that, life's not easy. But there's always another game tomorrow, and that's what you have to remember.
In life today, Mariam Pempa, you have to keep learning while you're earning. What do you do to keep getting better at your craft?
I listen to as many announcers as I can. I don't watch or listen to a ball game like most people do. I don't listen to see what's happening in the ballgame. I listen to see how other announcers approach their craft. I had the great opportunity working in Los Angeles for 7 years with the Angels to listen to Vin Scully for 7 seasons doing Dodgers baseball. I grew up listening to Ernie Harwell. And really, even as a kid, I never listened to Tiger baseball like most other kids did. They wanted to know what the score was, you know, what did Norm Cash do tonight, or you know, how well did Mark Fittich pitch. I listened to see how Ernie Harwell and Paul Carey would actually call a game, the mechanics of calling a game. And that's what I still do. And I think it's important because you're never going to stop learning. And I think Vin Scully would even tell you, on a nightly basis, he still learns some things every now and then. So it's a continuing process. I like to see how other guys do it. I don't always agree with it. I think that sometimes they do things better than I do, but sometimes maybe they don't do things as well as I do. But that's all the learning process. And the more you listen and the more you try and learn, the better you get.
How do you prepare or prep for each upcoming series?
Well, that's the key word, series. You actually do, Jack. You prep for a series and not for a game. And that's where I think baseball is different than basketball, where you might play the Bucks on one night and then, you know, you're off to another city the next night. You know, where with baseball, you play the Royals one night, but you're going to play them the next three nights possibly. So I think a lot of the prep for me is done actually this time of the year in the off season, where I try and scour the internet for biographical stories about players, about teams. And the more I do now, the less I have to do during the season. When you do 160 games, it becomes very difficult to keep it fresh. And that's, I think, the biggest challenge in our job is keeping it fresh on a nightly basis. It's almost impossible at some points because you have to be repetitive with as many games as we do and the sheer volume that we do. But, you know, get up every morning, read the internet, read all the newspapers. If we're playing the Boston Red Sox the next 3 days, I'm reading the Boston Globe as much as I can leading up to that series to learn about their team. So it's an ongoing process.
What's the single biggest thrill you've had in announcing?
Wow. I don't know that I could pick one. I can narrow it down. Certainly being on hand when Cal Ripken beat Lou Gehrig's record for consecutive games played back in 1995, 2,132 at that time. That was an incredible event. It was a record that I thought would never be broken, and now I'm positive it never will be with the way the game is today. But, you know, the two Verlander no-hitters, Maglio's home run to put the Tigers into the World Series, the Galarraga near-perfect game, those are all some of the things that I will remember. But I think if I had to narrow it down to one, it would be broadcasting my first Major League game because, ironically enough, it came against the Detroit Tigers. I was broadcasting for the Angels in 95. We happened to open up against the Tigers at Anaheim Stadium and interviewing Sparky Anderson before that game for a pregame interview.
Tell us about your broadcast partner, Rod Allen.
Rod's a very, very intelligent guy. When it comes to explaining the game of baseball, and that can be very difficult. Rod will tell you what's going to happen as opposed to what just happened. Not many guys can do that. And just sitting next to him the last 9 years, we've worked together 9 years now, I've learned so much about the game. He's got a great sense of humor. More than anything else, he really loves the game. And some guys come to work to earn a paycheck, but he loves the game. And I think listeners can hear that. And it's been fun messing with him the last 9 years, and he messes with me, and I think overall we try to have as good a time as we can.
We're talking to Mario Ampembo. When we come back, we'll ask him about arguably the most beloved man in Michigan history. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Mario Ampembo. If you want to learn more about him, www.marioimpemba.com. Mario, the most beloved man, arguably, in Michigan history, Ernie Harwell, please.
Well, I have two stories about Ernie. I think the first one that jumps to my mind is 95 when we talked about the fact that we opened up against the Tigers. I was broadcasting for the Angels, and I remember coming up to the press box. You know, it was my first big league game, and I was so intimidated by the whole situation. This was my first big league opportunity. And I remember walking into the press dining room at Angel Stadium at the time, and there was George Kell, Al Kaline, Paul Carey, and Ernie Harwell all sitting having a pregame meal. And I thought, I've got to go up there and introduce myself. I have to. These guys are my idols. I just couldn't do it. I was so intimidated, I couldn't do it. Later that night, I ran into Ernie in the press box, and I decided I'm going to introduce myself. I did, and Ernie said, "Give me your parents' names. I'm going to drop their names on the air tonight and tell them their young son is doing really well in Southern California." And he did. That night, he went on the air and said, "Rose and Dominic and Pemba, our young son Mario is doing fine. He's in the big leagues now, broadcasting Major League Baseball. I just met him a few minutes ago, and he's doing really well." And that meant a lot to me. I mean, I didn't ask him to do that, but he did that, and that's the type of person Ernie was. The other story about Ernie is a couple of years ago before he passed away, he was very sick, and we were on the Tigers caravan. We had a stop at Cobo Arena, and we were talking to a bunch of Tigers fans, pumping up the Tigers, and one fan asked me specifically on the stage, you know, we had all these players, and one fan said, "Mario, I've got a question for you. What is it like, or what was it like working with Ernie Harwell?" And I had a chance to do a couple of TV games with him when he filled in for Rod Allen. And I just went on to talk about how great of a human being he was, how he was my idol, how he was a great person and a great announcer, and talked about how much I enjoyed being around Ernie Harwell. The next day, after the caravan was over, I'm sitting on my couch watching football, and my phone rings. I didn't recognize the number, and I didn't answer it. I let it go to voicemail. We were tired. We had just finished the caravan. It's a grueling two-day event. I pick up my cell phone, call my voicemail, and it's Ernie Harwell. He had left me a message thanking me for saying nice things about him at the caravan yesterday. Apparently, somebody had told him that, hey, this guy said some nice things about you. He picked up the phone, and at this point, he was very ill, and took the time to call me to thank me for doing that. And I will never forget that. I mean, I still have that message. I saved that message, and it speaks volumes about a guy that cares so much for people, and I think that over the years, people realized through his broadcast how much he cared for them.
People marvel at his memory, his recall. How did Ernie Harwell do that?
I don't know. He's on a different planet when it comes to that. And I've seen it in action. A couple of years ago, the Tigers played at the Hall of Fame game. I don't believe they have the Hall of Fame game anymore, but Hall of Fame weekend, they play a baseball game where two teams come in. And I remember we took Ernie with us because with Fox Sports Detroit, we wanted him to do some vignettes about players that are in the Hall of Fame. So we basically brought Ernie into the Hall of Fame, mic'd him up, and the producer would say, Ernie, Honus Wagner, give us 3 minutes on Honus, go. And he would stand in front of the Honus Wagner exhibit and talk for 3 minutes exactly off the top of his head. And then we move him to Mickey Mantle. And he'd talk about Mickey Mantle for 3 minutes exactly in his head. He knew exactly when 3 minutes was up. Off the top of his head, no scripts. And he would do this. We would go from player to player to exhibit, and I'm thinking, I could never, ever do that. And I'll never, ever be able to do that. And that's one of the things that just makes you realize how special this guy was.
He had a lot of sayings. One of them was, whenever you have the choice of being right or kind, always choose kind.
And you know what? Not enough people do that. I try to do that every day in my life, but you know, I don't know that I'm capable of it. I don't know that most people are capable of it. Ernie was the one person that is capable of that. And I saw it my very first spring training with him in 2002. I mean, it was the first time, and that happened to be Ernie's last year, the first time that I had a chance to be around Ernie in spring training, in the hotels, on the flights, in all the different cities, in the press boxes. And to see him at every stop be kind to every single person that he ran into. He would never turn down an autograph request. He always had time to pop in your booth and say, hi, how's it going, how's the family? There aren't enough people like that in the world, and certainly not in the business. So he was an incredible person.
You mentioned in an earlier segment Vin Scully, who many believe is the greatest of all time. Talk about Vin Scully.
Well, I had the opportunity, having worked in L.A. for 7 years with the Angels, to listen to Vin Scully. And what I decided to do early on in my career, because I was a young broadcaster, was I knew Vin was considered one of the best. And so I decided that I was going to try and learn from Vin Scully. So one of the things I would do is I would tape Dodgers games and then listen back to them. Obviously, I couldn't listen to them live because we were both working at the same time. But the one thing I realized, I taped a series that he did against our team, the Angels. And as I went back and listened to those games, the one thing I realized was that he knows more about my players or our players than I knew myself. So he had done more research about our team than I actually knew about myself. And it was at that point that I realized you really have to be ultra prepared to be able to do it at this level. And Vin Scully is ultra prepared. He has more stories and more background information than any announcer that I know. And it comes through hard work. Vin doesn't just show up at 6:59 and the camera goes on at 7 and he's off and running. He doesn't do that. He's at the ballpark very early. He's preparing. And even at this age and all these years in the game, he continues to do that. And that's why he's one of the greatest.
Speaking of legends, Mr. Tiger, Al Kaline.
Al Kaline, boy, one of the kids that I grew up watching. And, you know, a lot of times, Jack, when you don't want to meet some players because you're afraid they're not going to be very nice and it's going to ruin the whole image that you've had of them. Al Kaline is totally the opposite. Al Kaline is one of the most respected people in that clubhouse every day. And he shows up every day. He literally is in the clubhouse. We see him in the press box every day. You know, I've had talks with him about what it was like playing in Detroit in the 50s and 60s and what the city was like back then, and how it's changed over the years, how the game has changed over the years. Tremendous player, tremendous person, very gracious. And for what he's accomplished in the game, you could never tell it because he's always so humble.
Tell us about Operation Opening Day.
Operation Opening Day is a project that I conceived of 4 years ago now. We've done it three straight years. We have plans to do it again this year. Opening Day here in Detroit is such a tremendous event. It's more than just a baseball game. It's an event. It's for people in the city to come together and kind of be one and root for the same thing. And so what I realized in over the years is that a lot of our troops don't have a chance to come to Opening Day. They may have grown up Tigers fans. They came to the ballpark as kids, but now that they're in Afghanistan or Iraq or Iran, they can't come to Opening Day. So we decided, why not bring Opening Day to them? So what we do is every year we put a DVD together of Opening Day, all the festivities, the game itself, the pre- and post-game shows, and we will ship it to any service member of the service anywhere in the world, free of cost. We'll take care of the shipping, postage, and all that, and we send it out to them so they can have a little bit of peace of home with them wherever they may be serving.
If there's a listener tonight, Mario, that has a loved one in harm's way in the military, how can they learn more?
DetroitTigers.com/Operation Opening Day. DetroitTigers.com/Operation Opening Day, and all the information is there.
You mentioned that Opening Day is an event. There's few days in this city or Southeast Michigan where all people come together and join as one. The Thanksgiving Day parade is one. Opening Day is another. It's a holiday in Michigan. How do you explain the magic of Opening Day?
Well, I think it goes back to what we talked about a while ago, in that this game is different than any other game because it's handed down from generation to generation to generation. And it's because of that, I think it's kind of taken on a life of its own. I mean, Opening Day here in Detroit signals the start of a brand new season. You know, everybody talks about how this, if the Lions ever would get to a Super Bowl, this would be a football town, and it always is a football town. And believe me, I love the Lions, and I grew up watching the Lions. But in my heart, I will always believe this is a baseball town, and the Tigers in the World Series would be the greatest event for this city. And so I think that this team is so ingrained into the fabric of this city that the start of a new season, I think, just kind of brightens everybody's spirits. They're coming off a long winter. All of a sudden, now the ballpark's open. You see the green grass. It's like nothing else. It really is not. I mean, it's great going to a basketball arena. It's great going to a football field. But there's nothing like going to a baseball stadium, and especially on Opening Day in Detroit, where you see the bright green grass, and you can see now that summer is right around the corner instead of that long, hard winter.
We're talking to Mario Mpemba, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're with the voice of the Detroit Tigers on TV, Mario Mpemba. Mario, you're living your dream. If there's a listener tonight that has a huge dream, can their dreams come true?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember walking the halls of Stevenson High School in Sterling Heights saying that I wanted to be the next Ernie Harwell, and people laughing at me and thinking, yeah, good luck with that. Let me know how that turns out. Well, it turned out pretty good for me. You know, and as I mentioned, you need a lot of help along the way. You need a lot of breaks along the way. You have to remain humble. You have to be, you know, true to your skill set. You know, the one thing I try and tell people is that you can't be someone that you're not. But if you have a dream, and I tell the kids this all the time, you cannot ever let anyone tell you that you can't do it. Because not only in high school, but along the way, I had so many people tell me, yeah, hey, you're pretty good. You're just not good enough. You know, maybe you should look into something else. You know, I remember at Michigan State, you know, one of my first classes, you know, it was a communications class. Who wants to get into radio here? And I raised my hand. Okay, find a different line of work because radio is dying. You know, there are roadblocks around every corner, and there will always be roadblocks around every corner, especially now with the internet, where people can anonymously get online and say things about you or your family or the players. I mean, there are always going to be negative people. But, you know, if you believe that you really want something and if you believe that you can do it, I would always say just continue to follow that dream.
Two magical seasons, 2006 and last season, 2011. What do you remember about those two?
I remember that 2006 wasn't expected. I think it kind of came out of nowhere. It was a special team that had, I think, some special moments. It turned out to be a deeper lineup than we anticipated, a lot of power at the bottom of the lineup, but you had some guys, you know, that really stepped up. The way Kenny Rogers pitched in the playoffs that year was just beyond belief to me. You know, Maglio's season and hitting the big home run. This year, I think more people expected this would be a pretty good team that could contend, and it turned out to be that way. I mean, you've got the best pitcher in the game in Verlander. You've got the best hitter in the game in Cabrera. You've got one of the best closers in Valverde. You've got the best DH in Victor Martinez. Good young players in Alex Avila and some good role players like Santiago and Rayburn. It just meshed this year. You know, I mean, it. I remember in the playoffs thinking, after they beat the Yankees, we're going to the World Series again. I was convinced we are going to the World Series. We will beat Texas and get to the World Series again. Obviously fell short, but the one thing I remember about this year is the chemistry this ball club had and how far they went.
What amazed you the most about Justin Verlander in 2011?
Well, what amazes me the most about him is that he can do things that, you know, most mere mortals can't do. I mean, you know, for him to be able to throw a ball 100 miles an hour is incredible enough, but to have the command and control that he has is amazing to me. For a guy that can throw as hard as he does, his strikeout-to-walk ratio is about 5-1. So he doesn't walk many. He struck out one per inning last year on average. He was just incredible, and his desire to keep working and to remain where he is, to stay on top, is unparalleled. You know, most guys get a taste of being successful at the big league level, and they think, you know what, this is good enough to make good enough money. I'm good here. Verlander's not that way. Verlander is, let me get to the next step. Well, I'm not sure how much better you can do than MVP and Cy Young, but if there's a next step, Verlander will find it.
What's your prediction, Mario Ampemba, for the 2012 season?
Well, I'd be stunned if they don't win the Central Division. I think they're clearly the class of the Central. I think with the possibility now of adding another wild card this year, I think the Tigers almost certainly will get into the playoffs, barring any injury or unforeseen slumps. But they're just too talented not to make the playoffs this year. And once you get in, you know, it's like the NCAA tournament. Anything can happen. Anybody can win. I mean, we saw that with the Cardinals last year. So you just have to get in. And, you know, and I think they will this year.
Mariano Rivera, arguably the greatest closer of all time. He's got one pitch. Everybody knows it's coming. They can't hit it. And no other pitcher can do what he does. Why can't they figure out to do what he does?
I don't know. And if I did know, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be on some major league bench right now coaching people on how to do it. But, you know, the amazing thing about Rivera is he's right-handed, and sometimes switch hitters will actually bat right-handed against him because they don't want that cutter coming in on their hands if they bat lefty. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's God-given ability. He gets more movement on that cut fastball than anybody that has ever thrown that pitch, and he's going to ride that pitch all the way to the Hall of Fame, and it really is remarkable to watch him play.
You mentioned after we beat the Yankees, you said we're going to the World Series. If it hadn't been for Nelson Cruz, we would have gone to the World Series. He was lousy against Tampa. Then he was lousy against St. Louis, but he killed us. Why?
I don't know, and I've seen that a lot. I mean, it's certain matchups, certain times. Who knows? Maybe he just felt good for that seven-day stretch where, you know, he woke up and just felt great. Every morning he played the Tigers. Baseball is an interesting sport because you play it every single day, and it's very difficult to remain consistent every single day. I've seen Miguel Cabrera go on stretches where nobody can literally get him out, and then I've seen him go through stretches where he can't get the ball out of the infield. Those stretches are few and far between, and they don't happen very long, but they do happen. And that's what's crazy about baseball. You can go through swings where you are unstoppable and you're in the zone, and there are just other times where you just can't get it going, and that's what's great about the game.
Mario Ampemba, you're still a young man. You've got your dream job. What dreams or goals do you still have?
Well, people ask me many times, do you want to do this at the network level? And my answer is always the same. You know, that would be the next progression for me logically, but it's not what I want. I mean, I want to stay here in Detroit doing Tigers baseball for as long as I can. This is my hometown. It's my hometown team. This is, as I tell people all the time, the top rung of my ladder. So my dreams are to continue to do the best that I can here, to work in a great city with the greatest fans in baseball, and hopefully at some point do a World Series with the Tigers in it.
Dave Dombrowski, the man behind the scenes, has done a great job over and over and over. Tell us something we don't know about Dave Dombrowski.
Dave Dombrowski has a photographic memory. I don't know that people know that, but he can recall things that most people can't. And it's really kind of amazing to see it in action. But, you know, Dave is just really good at what he does because he knows the sport. He knows personalities. He knows how to handle people. He knows how to manage people. And beyond that, he has a knack for making the right trade at the right time. And so all of them are not going to be good trades. There's no general manager out there that has not failed in a trade. But I think if you're consistent, you're among the best, and that's why I think Dave is among the best. But his memory, I think, serves him in a capacity that most don't.
As our time winds down together tonight, last question, Mario. What advice would you give to our young listeners?
Well, I think the major piece of advice that I would give to kids, and I always do this when I speak to whether it's high school kids or college kids, don't be afraid to step out of your comfort zone, because there are going to be many times in your life where you're going to be asked to do something that you don't really want to do or that you don't think you can do. I was asked to go take a job in Plainview, Texas, coming out of college. That's 1,500 miles away from my family. I knew no one down there. I would have been all alone. It just was so intimidating and daunting to me, but I did it. I stepped out of my comfort zone, and that was one building block into my career. I was asked to do professional hockey when I got to Peoria, Illinois. I didn't do much hockey. I didn't think I was very good at it. But I did 2 years of it, and I became good at it. You can't sell yourself short. You have to step out of your comfort zone every now and then. Do some things that are a little foreign to you, and I think in the end it pays off.
Mario Impemba, thanks for coming on. Thanks for 10 years of telling us what we're watching in a great way. And most importantly, you've been a fantastic inspiration to a lot of people. Just a great human being, humble, that does a great job. Keep it up.
Jax, thank you very much. I owe that all to my parents, and I appreciate having the visit today. Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoke.
Believe in yourself.